Hey, gang. I'm on the scene. This is Patrick Slattery with National Bugle Radio. Today, I don't have a guest. Well, I do have my trusty engineer here, Mr. T. Mr. T, are you a good doggy? Mr. T is a good doggy. But otherwise, I don't have a guest. I will be instead taking calls if anybody wants to call in. The number is 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. I like having guests because I know some interesting people, people I think that would interest the RBN audience, people like Mark Collette, who was on the show yesterday. But arranging guests every day is a big chore. And also, of course, when I have guests on, then I don't get it's harder to take callers. And I do want to take calls. I'm on another show, Stormfront Radio, which takes calls. We take a lot of callers every day. It's basically a call-in show. And I was really excited when John Stadtmiller gave me this great opportunity here on RBN, partly because I also would like to do interviews. I like doing interviews, and I had a YouTube channel where I was doing interviews, weekly interviews. And, that seemed to be fairly popular and going well. But today, now, as you know, I used to be a university professor, and today, unless I get calls, it's going to be kind of a lecture. I have a topic that I want to talk about that I think is important, and that I think there's a lot of misunderstanding and a lack of general information. This is North Korea. I was talking about it a little bit on the Stormfront Radio earlier today, but it's been in the news. It's been in the news, North Korea, a good deal since early in the Trump administration. It came to the forefront. Why? I don't know why. It may have to do with having a large number of generals in top policy-making areas. And generals, as opposed to, say, politicians, are more likely to have an interest and a background in Korea. Why generals more than politicians? Well, politicians are, if you're a member of Congress, you are necessarily subjected to immense pressure from AIPAC, from the America-Israel Public Affairs Committee, from the Israel lobby or the Jewish lobby. So there is going to be a great deal of preoccupation with the Middle East, with Israel, with Iran, with Islamic terrorism among politicians. You don't have anywhere near the same level of a Korea lobby. I think back in the 1970s, you did, and if anybody's old enough, you'll remember Jimmy Carter had a kind of Korea gate. He was accused of having received or some sort of undue influence from a lobby representing the South Korean dictator, Park Chung-hee, who was the father of the recent South Korean president, Park Jae-un, and she was recently impeached. But you don't have nearly the same level of involvement in American politics by Korean pressure groups as you do by Jewish pressure groups, even though there are a lot of Koreans in the United States. But the military, we have large military bases in South Korea. And now, during the Cold War, our biggest military bases and our most military bases were in West Germany. And we still have bases in Germany, but they've been scaled way back. The main three locations of our military bases had been before all this Gulf War, Iraq War business had started, but it had been primarily Germany first and then South Korea and Japan next. And so South Korea still has somewhere around 40,000 American troops. It used to have 50,000. I think it's been scaled back a certain amount. But what that means is that any flag officer, at least in the Army in particular, but you know, others, the other branches of services as well, is likely to have had a tour of duty, if not in South Korea, somewhere near South Korea, Okinawa or Japan, maybe even Guam, but somewhere nearby, somewhere that where North Korea, the you know, the possibility of conflict with North Korea is forefront in their minds. And so I think part of the reason that North Korea has become such a big issue has to do with having a general as a national security advisor, a general as Secretary of Defense, and then a general now as the White House Chief of Staff. And, you know, on the one hand, I really don't see as direct a role of Jewish power here. And basically, as you, listeners to this show know, I am primarily concerned with and alarmed at Jewish power in the United States and around the world, which I see as highly destructive. I'm not saying that what's going on in North Korea has no Jewish link, and anybody who wants to call and talk about it, you're more than welcome. But this is one important area of the world, important risk and hazard that we face that I don't primarily blame on Zionism or Jewish power. So what is the origin of this North Korean problem? So the Korean Peninsula for the first half of the 20th century had been dominated by Japan. Japan had beat the Russian Empire in the 1904-1905 Russo-Japanese War to stake out the preeminent position in Korea above China, above Russia, its other two neighbors. And, you know, by 1910 had annexed the entire Korean Peninsula and ruled it as a colony for the next 35 years. And the Koreans and Japanese, the Koreans are ethnically more closely related to the Japanese than anyone else. They're more linguistically related than anyone else. So the Koreans, more than any other ethnic group or nationality, have an easier time learning the Japanese language and are the least physically identifiable as foreign in Japan. And there was an attempt to by the Japanese to assimilate Koreans to be Japanese. That did not mean that they the Koreans in the Korean Peninsula immediately had equal rights and everything was like that. It was kind of heavy-handed and harsh. There was a repression of the Korean language and whatnot. But so what you wound up having was a lot of resentment against the Japanese. We don't have to go into the details of that, but it did mean that during the 1930s, you had a guerrilla movement, you had armed resistance against Japanese colonial rule in Korea. Maybe not as much in Korea as in Manchuria, which was also under Japanese influence. And Kim Il-sung, the grandfather of the current North Korean leader, Kim Il-sung was active in this guerrilla resistance to the Japanese. He was active in Manchuria. And so you had this. And, of course, the most prominent opponents of Japanese colonial rules, not the only, but the most prominent, the most important, were communists. You know, this is the 1930s, 1940s, and communism was seen as a viable alternative to many people around the world. with the end of World War II and the defeat of the Japanese, now in Europe, Europe was split between the Soviet Union, Stalin's Soviet Union, and the West. And Germany was split, and Berlin was split. They were divided. This could be seen as unavoidable because the Soviet Union had been fighting Germany, and their troops had marched across Eastern Europe and got to Germany, reached Berlin, and so they were there. In East Asia, it was different. There had been an agreement that once Germany was defeated, that the Soviet Union would enter the war against Japan. They had dragged their feet and so only wound up entering the war against Japan a day or two after the Hiroshima bomb. And so they weren't there. And hence, there was no need to divide Japan. But as an enticement to get the Soviets into the war against Japan, which would end the war earlier, and by this time the United States, or at least the public, was war-weary, as an enticement, there was an offer to allow the Soviets to accept the Japanese surrender in the northern part of the Korean Peninsula, and the Americans would accept the surrender in the southern part. Well, where was the line going to be? And it just so happened there wasn't an immediately obvious natural boundary like a river, you know, which you had in Germany. You had rivers that presented themselves as natural dividing lines between East and West. But a staffer, I think he was an army captain at the time, but he was at the State Department, Dean Rusk, who later became Secretary of State, but back in, I guess it was 1944 or early 45, I think it was before the Yalta Conference. So in 1944, he's looking at the map, notices the 38th parallel, 38th latitude, bisects the Korean Peninsula, and so that was suggested, and in fact, that was implemented. And so the Soviets accepted the Japanese surrender in the north. The Americans accepted the Japanese surrender in the south. It took a number of weeks for the Soviets and the Japanese, Soviets and the Americans, to actually march in there and take control of the country. And of course, they brought with them their preferred leaders. In the south, the United States had an old man named. He's known as Syngman Rhee. The Korean name would be Lee Sung-man, who had been living in Hawaii for some over 40 years, and had, in fact, his Korean had become quite rusty, and they had him set up a government in the south, which was never a popular government, never really had popular support. In the north, there were a number of potential leaders. One was Kim Il-sung, grandfather of Kim Jong-un. He wasn't necessarily a shoo-in. He was young. He was only in his early 30s. He would have been about 33 at the time he entered Pyongyang in a Soviet military uniform bearing the rank of major. But he was effective in as the government was being set up. There were other groups. There was communists who had better ties to Moscow. There were communists had ties to the Chinese communists who were not yet in control of China, but they had contacts with Chairman Mao. There were more indigenous communists, and there were some non-communists, but it was mostly communist. Kim Il-sung managed to win out, and when North Korea was established as a state, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea was established in, I believe it was June 1948, or maybe it was July, Kim Il-sung was the premier. And his family has ruled ever since. And so that's 1948. shortly after that, the Americans established the Republic of Korea in the South with Syngman Rhee as the president. And immediately you have this rivalry, because both sides claim to be the only legitimate government for the entire peninsula. 2 years later, you have the Korean War, which was always sold to Americans and sold to the world as a sneak attack, a sudden sneak attack by the North against the South. There's plenty of data, plenty of evidence. A Marxist Jewish journalist by the name of I.F. Stone, who, despite being Marxist and Jewish, presented very good evidence to show that, in fact, this wasn't so much a sudden invasion as an escalation of border conflicts that had been going on back and forth for a matter of months. And in fact, it was not at all a surprise. You had Chinese, or, you know, the nationalist Chinese, the Kuomintang, that was by then limited to just Taiwan, but they had managed to corner the soybean market, because the soybeans were going to be disrupted. The soybean trade from Manchuria was going to be disrupted. They had there was a lot of evidence that various groups knew that a war was going to take place. So it wasn't necessarily a sneak attack. And the three-year Korean War was extremely brutal, extremely bloody. The front moved south initially. The North Koreans took over almost the entire peninsula, everything except Busan and its environs. The United States counterattacked, pushed the front way back up north, close to the Yalu River, which divides the Korean Peninsula from China. And then it went back and forth and back and forth. And every time the front passed through an area, a village, it would be destroyed. So it was a devastating war. The United States used a great deal of napalm, far more napalm on North Korea than it ever did on Vietnam. And there was even the proposal by General MacArthur, who was initially in charge of the war, wanted to push the war into China, because China had intervened, which is why the front moved south again. China had intervened. He wanted to invade China. Truman fired him. You also had George Wallace's running mate in 1968. His name slips my mind, but he wanted to use nuclear weapons all over the Korean-Chinese border to make it kind of a no-go zone for anybody. That did not happen. But you did have a very bloody war that ended in a ceasefire, never a formal treaty. A ceasefire with two rival governments in the North and the South. And initially, it was the government in the North that was viewed by most Koreans, maybe not so much in South Korea, but the Koreans outside of Korea and by much of the world, as being more legitimate, because it had more popular support. The government of Syngman Rhee had little popular support and had massacred hundreds of thousands of people in Jeju Island. We will be back after the break. I hope this is interesting for everybody. It's interesting for me.
I'm getting older and noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain, and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone, and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to angioprim.com. That's A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M.com. Or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll free at 877-882-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. Call 877-882-7221 or go to the website angioprim.com.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Because this is North Korean music that was recorded from Radio Pyongyang. I was somewhere in Japan, I think, or maybe in South Korea when I recorded it. Usually in South Korea, they jam it. And if they're not jamming it, it comes through more clearly. That must have been recorded from Japan sometime, maybe around 1985. That's what they listen to. They don't listen to Nicki Minaj. And if you understood Korean, the lyrics might be kind of creepy. They're very likely singing the praises of Kim Il-sung, their leader, the son of mankind, son meaning S-U-N. So what you had emerging from the Korean War, and even before, really, 1948, the North Korean state was founded on the basis of a personality cult. Now, there was the North Korean, if you want to call it regime, you could call it regime, but the North Korean leadership did have more legitimacy than the South Korean leadership initially because of a few things. One is the South Korean leadership was, the leader was, I mean, he had been outside of Korea for so long that he barely spoke Korean, or his Korean was limited. His English was more, he was more comfortable in English. and was seen very much as an American puppet. The North Korean government, Kim Il-sung was not the closest to Moscow out of all the potential successors. And the Koreans in general, on the peninsula and outside the peninsula, in the diaspora, and there's a big diaspora in Siberia, in Manchuria, in Japan, and in the United States, was very communist. And so there was a legitimacy initially due to ideology and due to the fact that the leadership had been closer to Korea. Many had been in Korea, and they were just seen more legitimate. Then in the 1950s, the Korean economy, North Korean economy, grew much faster than the South Korean economy. Actually, a command economy, if you're starting from zero, like a country that's been devastated by war, a command economy, which is mobilizing labor, which can, you know, mobilize slave labor, basically, can rebuild things at least to a more or less primitive state, but can get things rebuilt faster than a market economy can, which can't necessarily mobilize slave labor. There was a legitimacy that the North had that the South lacked for a number of years. You had the other aspect of North Korea that's very important to remember is this cult of personality. So when the North Korean state was created in the late 1940s, who was the leader of the communist world? Who was everybody modeling themselves after? It was Joseph Stalin. And Joseph Stalin had built himself a cult of personality where he was basically an object of worship. And other communist leaders who came to power in the Stalinist era, including Mao Zedong, including the leaders of Eastern Europe, the Soviet satellite states that emerged after World War II, they all built cults of personality around them. And Kim Il-sung did as well. Now, what happened is when Stalin died in, was it 52 or 53? It was towards the end of the Korean War. Stalin died, and then, we'll be back with this. I think you'll find this interesting. We're going to a deep understanding of what's going on. Yeah. Back after the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech. Quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com, educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
And welcome back to the show. That is the non-North Korean music of Filbert Applebag. I will be accepting calls if you want to call in. The number 1-800-313-9443. I was going over North Korean history and the death of Joseph Stalin in March of 1953. He was the personality cult guy. Now, I don't want to go into a lot of Soviet politics, but within a few years, within about 3 years of Stalin's death, as a result of internal politics in the Soviet Communist Party, Nikita Khrushchev, the leader who had emerged, denounced Joseph Stalin. Now, in denouncing Joseph Stalin, this undermined all of the Stalinist leaders who had come to power and had built up a cult of personality. And you saw them fall one after another in Eastern Europe. Mao, who had modeled himself in many ways after Stalin, was furious with Khrushchev, and it was the start of the Sino-Soviet split. And you had for decades after that a massive rivalry, especially within the communist world, between the Soviets and the Chinese. The North Koreans at that time, North Korea still had Chinese troops in North Korea. They wound up, the last Chinese troops left later in the decade. I think by 1959 they were all gone. But in 1956, when this Sino-Soviet split happened, they were still in North Korea. North Korea was had a lot of Chinese influence. Initially, it was more under Soviet influence, but especially after the Korean War and the intervention of the Chinese volunteers, as they were called, you had more influence from the Chinese. The Koreans had imitated, although less disastrously, they had imitated China's Great Leap Forward in what they called the Flying Horse Movement, the Cholima Undong. And so the North Koreans sided with the Chinese, at least for the time being. And this inoculated Kim Il-sung from the fate that was met by the Eastern European leaders who fell one after another. You know, and you'll remember things like, for instance, in Hungary, you had the leadership being overthrown and a lot of chaos. Meanwhile, as I recall, 1960, in the South, President Syngman Rhee was very unpopular. There was an election, not for president, but for vice president, and because Syngman Rhee was president for life, his candidate lost. He wound up being forced out of office, and you had a general, not immediately, but after a short period of time, a general Park Jong-il, General Park, President Park, who took over South Korea and ruled it for about 18 years, I believe. And General Park actually modeled part of his economic policy after the North Korean policy, which the North Korean economic policy was self-reliance, juche, self-reliance, where they would build up their own industries instead of relying on imports of industrial goods. Now, in Korea, in North Korea, it went to its extreme. They wanted to be self-reliant in everything. South Korea, they followed a more careful policy, and they wanted to be self-reliant in what's important. They didn't care as much about what wasn't important. But at any rate, South Korea, which lacked political legitimacy throughout the course of General Park's reign until he was assassinated by his bodyguards, I believe, in September 1979, as I recall. He was assassinated, but by that time, the South Korean economy had grown quite a bit, and South Korean living standards had improved and were probably better than most North Korean living standards, and this economic success was starting to spill over into the realm of politics and become a political legitimacy as North Korean growth, as I said, in terms of rebuilding from the devastation of a war, their policies were successful. But once you start getting into the more complicated economics of a consumer society, they were not successful. And so you had the South Korean economy move past the North Korean economy, and even more so in the 1980s. So by the 1980s, South Korea was clearly more successful than North Korea in terms of living standards and economic power. Now, so we're going to fast forward, and we get to the mid-1980s. I want to bring up two events from the Soviet Union, the Chernobyl disaster and also the rule of President Gorbachev. So you have the Chernobyl disaster, this meltdown of a nuclear power plant, impacted North Korea because North Korea had had built a nuclear power plant based after the Chernobyl design. And they had started building it in 1980, and then it actually went critical. It started having the chain reaction in 1986, which is only less than a year or so after the Chernobyl disaster, which, as I recall, was April 1985. And the North Korea had joined a few months earlier, at the end of 1985, they had joined the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which the terms of the treaty actually entitled North Korea to international aid in developing a nuclear power industry. of course, nuclear power and nuclear weapons use much of the same technology. And by the time the terms of the safeguarding terms of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty were going into force, it takes some time, a number of years. By 1992, when the weapons inspectors and the various inspectors came to North Korea, they felt that there were violations. And this led to a showdown with the new Clinton administration in 1993, where Clinton was on the verge of bombing North Korea. Now, North Korea didn't have nuclear weapons at the time, but it had enough conventional forces and enough proximity to Seoul and, you know, the industrial area of South Korea, that it could have, even if North Korea was wiped out as a state, it would have created massive damage in South Korea and potentially in Japan and American bases there. Former President Carter intervened. He went to North Korea and struck a deal whereby, he struck a deal which, or defused the situation, and a deal was subsequently reached, which would replace the Chernobyl-style nuclear reactor that was in operation in North Korea. It was the Yongbyon reactor, which was not only dangerous in terms of melting down like Chernobyl, but also would provide easy access to fissionable material for nuclear weapons. The idea was to shut down that reactor and build two new reactors for generating electricity that would be under international inspection and would be a safer design. That was the deal. And the reactors were supposed to be in operation. They were supposed to be in operation in early 2003. Well, that was the deal, but as many observers note, Ambassador Boswell, who was the head of the organization that was going to oversee the construction of the reactors, he was later the U.S. ambassador to South Korea. As Ambassador Boswell said, the agreement was basically a dead letter 2 weeks after it was signed. The American administration had no intention of following through on it. And eventually, the North Koreans caught on to this. Now, what had happened is in the summer of 1994, Kim Il-sung died. He was in his 80s, and he was not in good health, and he died, and his son Kim Jong-il was his appointed successor. This is 1994. Many academics, myself included, had prophesized that the death of Kim Il-sung would result in the collapse of the North Korean state. We felt, incorrectly, that the cult of personality had grown to the point where, you know, some North Koreans almost looked at Kim Il-sung as being an immortal. And so what are you going to do when this immortal dies? Aside from that, Kim Jong-il, his son, who then wound up ruling North Korea for the next 16 years, 18 years, Kim Jong-il had been a playboy. He just didn't seem, we didn't see him as being somebody who would be capable of gaining the support of the Workers' Party, the ruling Workers' Party, or the military, which is, those are the two important power sources. Then, of course, there's the Kim family, and he had half-brothers who were potential rivals. He had uncles, and we didn't see him consolidating his power for long. And we were wrong. And what happened was, over the course of the 1990s, not only was this nuclear power plant, these two nuclear power plants that had been agreed on, not completed, but they were not even started. Ground wasn't broken on them until late 2002, and they were, of course, supposed to be operational by 2003. The money wasn't spent on it, and of course, in 2002, George Bush read a speech written for him by the Jewish Canadian David Frum, where he, the speech in the State of the Union in 2002, he declared an axis of evil with Iraq and Iran, and for whatever reason, he threw North Korea into it. And this was very alarming to North Korea, especially seeing as it was obvious that the Bush administration had plans to invade Iraq, which they subsequently did. They had designs for war with and regime change in Iran. And so the North Koreans responded to this. The lack of progress on carrying through the American end, the American slash Japanese slash South Korean end of building these reactors in North Korea, and then the implicit threat in being placed in the axis of evil, they withdrew. They announced their intention to withdraw from the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. They went through the protocol, the legal protocol, and subsequently withdrew. And they reopened. They took the Yongbyon reactor out of mothballs and restarted it, and started processing plutonium from it for the use of nuclear bombs, which they subsequently have been testing. So that's the background. And I know I play North Korean music for my bumper music. I do that not because I support the North Korean state, but because on Stormfront Radio, in September last month, Don Black, he was using a Johnny Cash song written by Tom Petty, I Won't Back Down. He was using that, and these Jewish lawyers representing the Johnny Cash family called him up and had him cease and desist from using that song. In fact, he had to cease and desist from making his archives of the past 4 years available because they all included that in the opening music, and it was a major disruption. So when I started this show a few weeks later, I thought, I don't want any copyrighted material. I don't want any Jewish lawyers calling me up telling me to take my programs off of archive. And I couldn't imagine any Jewish lawyers calling me up and being employed by the government of North Korea or Radio Pyongyang and telling me to stop using the North Korean music, which is why I use it. And plus, I think it's nice music. I'm not trying to be an apologist for North Korea. There's a great deal of problems, internal problems, which is their business, not our business. And there's some bad behavior in the international scene. They do export methamphetamines to Japan and elsewhere, I'm sure. They do money counterfeiting. There's stuff that they do. So I'm not trying to make them into these innocent eternal victims, but they have legitimate grievances against the United States. And anybody who is aware of, who really studies American foreign policy knows that American foreign policy over the past many decades has not been in the interests of American people. It's easy when you look at the Middle East, but also in East Asia, it really hasn't been in the interest of the American people. So then that brings us to what should be done now. Where do we go from here? We have this situation where you have the president of the United States and the leader of North Korea who are engaged in effectively a Twitter war. Trump uses Twitter. Kim Jong-un uses the Radio Pyongyang or TV Pyongyang, uses that. But they're in an insult war with each other, and the generals are rattling sabers and American generals sending military assets near North Korea. North Koreans testing increasingly longer range missiles, and we know that they've exploded a number of nuclear weapons and apparently even a thermonuclear hydrogen weapon. So where do we go from here? I know we're almost up at the break, but if anybody's heard me talk about this in the past, I often invoke the name of Dennis Rodman. How would Dennis Rodman save us? Well, it doesn't have to be Dennis Rodman. But if you remember Kissinger's breakthrough, China, it did involve. So we will be back after the break to wrap this up.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
So, I just want to emphasize that the last announcement, RBN is one of those rare sources of truth and good information, and without RBN, we're all going to be dancing to the tune of Hava Nagila for forever. So please go to RBN.org, or I guess republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the donate button and do what you can. All right, to get back to wrapping up my story, my proposal, where do we go from here with North Korea? And I think that first thing we need to do is we need a cooling off period. We need a cooling off period, and we need confidence building measures, and then we need some negotiations, mutually respectful negotiations. So what's the cooling off period? That's something that we really have to do unilaterally, okay? We should cancel our next round of military exercises that we do there. We have these annual military exercises. Just announce that we're going to cancel the next one, or don't announce it, but just hint it. Let it be known. Don't carry out military exercises. Stop responding tit for tat to North Korean insults. The missile tests are provocations. Just don't respond, or at least don't respond bellicosely. Just turn the other cheek for a matter of months. Then you need that's the cooling off period. Then you need confidence building. We haven't had diplomatic relations with North Korea. There is for the past, 15 years or so, there's been a diplomatic mission in New York at the UN. So they are here. But we don't deal with North Korea directly. We don't have very good lines of communication. A confidence-building measure would be like having the ping-pong diplomacy. When we sent over a ping-pong team to China during, 1972, just getting our bureaucrats and their bureaucrats together to figure out the logistics of setting up these ping-pong matches, it got them going. It created contact. It created a certain amount of mutual trust at a bureaucratic level. We could send over an NBA All-Star team, or, Dennis Rodman and retired NBA players, or whatever. They don't have to be basketball Americans. It could be something else, something cultural. We could bring in a North Korean choir or chorus or orchestra. We could stage a North Korean opera in Washington, D.C. at the Kennedy Center, something like that. They have some very nice opera. Do something cultural, something non-political, non-economic, something cultural, some sort of exchange. And frankly, I think basketball Americans for North Korean opera singers is actually a pretty good deal. But do something like that. Then you set the stages for some negotiations one-on-one, which is what they want. They really want it. To them, it would be a major concession on our part, something that they would then be willing to do concessions. Do we expect them to immediately disarm? No, I don't think we can. But we can get them to stop the testing, to hold back future development. We have to realize we're armed to the teeth, and it's pretty hypocritical of us to try to disarm everybody else. But there is a way forward, and it's through cooling off, confidence building, and mutually respectful bilateral negotiations. And anybody in the State Department is listening, contact me through Public Broadcasting Network, or you can go to nationalbugle.com and thank you very much. And we will be back tomorrow with my guest will be David Duke, so that's something to look forward to. See you tomorrow.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready to eat bacon. Exclusive.